Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcast of prior programs are also available there under Public Affairs. Today is September 16, 2020. The markets were mixed today, with the Dow closing up at 28,032, the NASDAQ down at 11,050, and the S&P down at 3385. The Fed also announced today that they were keeping rates steady near zero and indicated that they will stay there for years as accommodative measures for the economy recovering. Tonight, I am going to be talking about making the most of your charitable giving, and hopefully we'll talk about some ideas that will spur your thoughts on doing just that and doing it where you can kind of maximize the benefit for your particular situation. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. While I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us. Or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can just give your question to Lori and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio. You can also send questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. And that comes as an email to me and then I will respond. So charitable giving. Making the most of your charitable giving tonight. And I think this is a timely topic for several reasons. One, it's the United Way's Week of Action, and capital campaigns are underway at participating employers. So I think good time to talk about this. And to that point, I just want to also mention that City Center Allentown has announced $1 million match to new and or increased contributions to the United Way. So that, you know, gives us more bang for our buck in our giving. Another reason to talk about it now is required minimum distributions from retirement accounts are waived this year, which could impact people who do their charitable giving through what's called the Qualified Charitable Distribution, or a QCD. So I think that could impact the giving to some of our nonprofits, which means they may have a little bit of a shortfall this year. So I thought it's important to talk about that, but certainly raise some awareness around how the qualified charitable distributions work if you are in required minimum distribution age 70 and a half or older. Another reason I believe this is timely to talk about is we are coming into the fourth quarter, and it would be a good time to think about your charitable giving at this time. Remember, at the end of every show, I say be proactive, not reactive. And in being in proactive, we have to kind of think ahead and plan ahead for tax planning and things that are going on in our lives. So charitable giving could be one of them. A lot of people will defer their charitable giving to year end. So maybe you don't want to wait this year until, you know, the last minute. Let's be a little proactive and think about it ahead of time, or at least set out the plan early enough that you can implement it with plenty of time before you're in. So again, tonight I want to talk about the most of your charitable giving. So what I will start with is the simplest ways of giving, well, you know, what I would deem to be the simplest way of giving, and then go into more complicated giving. And the topics I would like to cover start with cash giving, cash donations, and then in-kind donations. That's when you're giving stuff. Then, of course, the qualified charitable distributions, or QCDs, that I mentioned. Appreciated long-term securities, if you're donating, you know, stock that you might own, or even a mutual fund. Appreciated long-term held positions. Donor-advised funds. A little bit maybe on private foundations. And, of course, time, talent, and treasure. Time, talent, and treasure in our giving. You may not be someone who could give your treasure, but you certainly could give time and talent, and that is needed as well, especially during these times. So let's talk about cash and start with cash. And there were a couple little changes this year in 2020 for the CARES Act. So the CARES Act was implemented, I think it was like March 20-something, March 24th or something, earlier this year after the pandemic hit and, you know, the stock market went crazy. There was some legislation that was passed. And in the CARES Act, there was a lot in the CARES Act, but a couple little nuggets for those who are philanthropic or charitably inclined. And one is a kind of a little small provision, but one that we haven't seen for many, many years. And that is an above the line deduction for cash contributions up to $300. So not a huge deduction, but for those people who no longer itemize and just take the standard deduction, we weren't benefiting from our charitable giving if we take a standard deduction. So in this way, you are now going to get a deduction for up to $300. Now that doesn't count the, you know, donations you're making in kind, like to the Goodwill. This is literally the cash-like deduction. So whether it is literally cash, but you're going to need a receipt, a credit card payment deemed to be cash, or a check that you write, also deemed to be a cash donation, up to $300. So cash-like donations up to $300 are above the line deductions if you would otherwise take the standard deduction. If you are itemizing, you don't get this $300 on top of that. So it's either or, standard deduction plus this up to $300 and, or itemizing. Now, again, the $300 means you actually had to give someone, you know, a nonprofit 501c3 $300. So you do want to keep your receipt for that deduction. You don't get to automatically take it. It's, you know, a lot of times people think, oh, that's so small and that's what the IRS allows, so I get to take the $300. No, the IRS allows it if you actually give it. So you want to make sure that you keep a receipt for that. Now, you may not get a receipt from the nonprofit if it's below $250 because generally that's when they're required to acknowledge that donation, but your check or that charge card statement can serve as, you know, a receipt to show that you made that deduction directly to a 501c3. So $300 above the line cash type contribution to a nonprofit for 2020, keep your receipt. We, a lot of people have probably gotten in the habit of not keeping their receipts because of being eligible for the higher standard deduction. So you're not in that habit anymore. If you did make a contribution this year and you weren't thinking of it and you didn't, you tossed the receipt or, you know, didn't pay attention and put it in your little tax folder where you're collecting your tax documents for the year, go grab that now and think about it because it might not be something you're going to think about, especially if you're preparing your own tax return. You don't have an accountant who's asking you these questions. Did you do this? So kind of put that together in your folder now. And when we come back from the break, then I will talk about the other provision in the CARES Act, the other nugget, which is a bigger nugget to talk about as far as cash contributions. Tonight, we are talking about making the most of your charitable giving. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We're talking about making the most of your charitable giving, starting with cash-type contributions. I mentioned the $300 above-the-line cash contribution deduction for 2020, which is new, and it's just 2020. It's a little something, depending on what tax bracket you're in. You may or may not benefit extraordinarily over that, but it's something. Now, the other nugget in the CARES Act was normally if we make charitable contributions, cash type charitable contributions, there's a limit on how much we can deduct. I have only seen this once in my entire career where someone made a charitable contribution. Well, no, I've seen it a few times more, but one in particular, where someone makes a charitable contribution in excess of the limitation. And it used to be that you couldn't deduct more than 50% of your income as a charitable deduction. So you could make a larger charitable deduction, you just couldn't deduct all of it. So for example, if someone made $50,000, the limit went up, by the way, to 60% traditionally. So if someone made $50,000 a year, and they and that could be any combination of income, their adjusted gross income is $50,000, and they made a $50,000 donation of cash to a 501c3, the limit would be at 60%. So 60% of 50,000 is 30,000. So your Schedule A charitable deduction would be limited to 30,000, and then you add it up with your other Schedule A deductions, and that's how you get to itemize. Any amount that was suspended from you deducting, so in my story, it's a $50,000 donation, it's limited to 30. I have an excess contribution, I'm not getting a benefit of 20,000. We could carry that forward 5 years. So the limitation to adjusted gross income has been 60% in recent years. For 2020, the CARES Act has increased that deduction to 100% for cash contributions. So again, the CARES Act is allowing 100% of your cash contributions to the extent of your income. Again, this does not apply to contributions other than cash, like to donor-advised funds, of gifts of appreciated securities. It needs to be a cash contribution to a 501c3 nonprofit. So that could be a big deal for some people. And if there was like a prior year that there was a carryover, I think that would kind of get baked into that in 2020. All right. So that is a nugget for those people who, you know, may see quite the need in our community, in our country, and maybe they just want to do a huge contribution and they have the means to do so. It won't be limited to more than, it will be limited to 100% of your income, which is pretty good, meaning it's not limited, I guess, is how I should say that. All right, so that is one of the nuggets in the CARES Act. I believe in 2021 it would go back to that 60% limitation, and any unused amount carries forward 5 years. All right, so cash contributions, that's cash. You need a receipt, a credit card, you need a receipt, checks you need a receipt. But if you don't get a receipt because the donation is less than $250, then that canceled check or credit card statement can be your documentation for that. But generally, I find that nonprofits will give you a receipt for everything because it's a way for them to ask a second time for more money. Even if you're making a $25 contribution, and my husband and I make some big contributions, and then we make a bunch of little ones, and we do get receipts from all of them because, of course, it's a way to reach out and ask for more contributions. Now, in charitable giving, the most often we see probably cash contributions. And so when I talk about the title of the show is making the most of your charitable giving, cash contributions aren't always the most tax-effective kinds of contributions to make, but it is what we see the most, cash contributions and also in-kind donations of what I'm going to call stuff. We'll, you know, have people who say, yes, I was very charitably inclined this year. I gave away, I cleaned my closets and I gave away a bunch of stuff. Well, in-kind donations have their own little set of rules. That's not a cash contribution. It's a donation of stuff. If the fair market value of that, or what I tell clients, the thrift shop value of that, is less than $500, we don't have to fill out a special schedule. You still have to have a receipt for that. So if you go to the Goodwill, the Salvation Army, the the Purple Heart, some of these organizations that take in-kind donations, you still need a receipt. We just don't have to do any special reporting on the tax return if it's under $500. And again, keep in mind, with the higher standard deduction, many people may not be itemizing anymore. This is, again, why we need to talk about making the most of your charitable giving, because, you know, there are ways to possibly benefit as we go through the show and kind of a little bit more of the more complicated giving strategies. You'll see we could maybe maximize. If you're going to be charitable and the government's going to give us a deduction for it and it's going to save on taxes, you know, that's a win-win in a number of ways. So when we're talking about in-kind donations of stuff, you still need a receipt. Basically, thrift shop value, they call it fair market value, but you have to kind of indicate how did you come up with it. And it's, you know, when you read the guidelines, it's basically, you know, what you would pay at a thrift shop. The Salvation Army has a calculator on their website that could be helpful in valuing items. It'll give you an idea. Oh, a shirt, $5, you know, a pair of pants, $6, that kind of thing. And you can enter the quantity and it will, you know, add that up for you. The IRS does talk about this in publications that they provide, and they do expect that this is good stuff that you're donating, not junky stuff. So it has to be in really, you know, good condition in order to, you know, take these deductions. So if the value of your donations is more than $500, you need to do a special schedule, and it's called a Form 8283, and you have to list all of those donations that you've made kind of in, you know, you can say Goodwill on July 13th, household items and clothing, $600. And then another one might be Salvation Army, November 1st, furniture, three pieces, $750, whatever it might be. So you need to list the name of the organization, the address, the fair market value of the property donated, how you valued it, such as thrift shop value, and the date of the donation. So all of those items need to, again, you don't have to list one shirt, two shirts, three pairs of pants, four pairs of socks. You say, you know, household goods or clothing or kitchen items or furniture, whatever it might be. You list it that way and the value. And again, that's listed on the Form 8283. So those are probably the most common kinds of donations, but that cash and the in-kind get valued basically at that fair market value. And it's reported on Schedule A if you itemize. If you don't itemize, then you're not getting a deduction for it, other than in 2020 for the cash gifts only, up to $300. That does not include the in-kind contributions. When we come back, we are going to talk about some of the more sophisticated ways to give that are going to be a little bit more tax favored, using qualified charitable distributions, donor advised funds, appreciated securities, etc. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about making the most of your charitable giving. This time of year, I think it's important to talk about. We do have the United Way Week of Action and capital campaigns at your employers. If you have a United Way campaign, that's all coming up and starting. And so we're talking about some ways to give. And also that City Center Allentown is having $1 million match on increased and new donations to the United Way. And you don't have to donate through an employer or a capital campaign for the United Way. You can make contributions directly there as well. It does not have to go through an employer, which I think a lot of people might think, and it doesn't have to. And they have a website, UnitedWayGLV.org. So I like to mention the United Way because I'm president of Women United, which is an affinity group of the United Way, and we see a lot of good being done in the community right now. So I think they deserve a lot of recognition, the United Way, for all that they're doing and all the nonprofits in our area who are just stepping up in just unmeasurable ways. So thank you to all of them. I did want to mention one last thing before I move on to qualified charitable distributions, and that is when we talk about in-kind donations, you also hear about donating cars. We even hear it on WDIY that you can donate your car. There are special rules around that, and you know, years ago when I first started doing tax returns, we would look up the fair market value of the car, and you know, that would be the donation. Well, many, many, many years ago, the IRS kind of changed that. It doesn't exactly work like that anymore. So I just want to caution people that you just want to make sure that you're working with a reputable nonprofit and organization so that the reporting for you in that donation, if you think you're going to itemize, if you're not going to itemize, it doesn't really matter. But if you're going to itemize, there are new requirements for donating a vehicle. There is a form, I think it's 1098C, that they use to report the value that you can use as a deduction for the car. The IRS generally limits the deduction to the actual sales price of the vehicle if it's sold by the charity. So you might think your car is worth $2,000, but if the charity sells your car for $1,500, then that ends up being the deduction. So be careful. And it requires the donor to get a timely acknowledgement from the charity to claim the deduction. So I had a client once who donated a car to a church, and the church itself, thank you very much, we really appreciate it. And the minister was going to use the car himself, but my client never got the contemporaneous acknowledgement. So we had to jump through some hoops. We had to educate the church so they understood what their responsibility was around that. And we wrote a letter to the IRS, asking them, you know, for an exception to this and explaining the situation that the church, you know, was not familiar with the donation of vehicles and did not understand the requirements. And they worked with us and it worked out just fine. Now, donors may claim a deduction of the vehicle's fair market value under the following circumstances. The charity makes a significant intervening use of the vehicle, such as using it to deliver Meals on Wheels. The charity makes a material improvement to the vehicle, major repairs that significantly increase its value and not mere painting or cleaning. The charity donates or sells the vehicle to a needy individual at a significantly below market price. If the transfer furthers the charitable purpose of helping a poor person in need of a means of transportation. All right, so there's a lot of different guidelines around that. So that is when you are donating a vehicle, there will be a form, you need contemporaneous acknowledgement, which means timely, you know, within a certain period of time, acknowledging the donation, and this form 1098C. And again, it matters if you are itemizing. All of this stuff matters if you're itemizing, other than that $300 for 2020 under the CARES Act. All right. And then the form 8283, it looks a little complicated. That's where I mentioned if you're donating more than $500 of in-kind property, such as, you know, household things. It's the form 8283 where you fill that out. And that's also the form you use if you're making a donation of appreciated securities, which I'll cover, you know, in a little bit. Let me move right now to qualified charitable distributions. Qualified charitable distributions is something that the IRS for several years went back and forth on, or Congress, I should say, that they were indicating that we could give directly out of an IRA to charity and not have to report that as taxable income if we were required minimum distribution age. So at 70 and a half, traditionally, I would have to take out a required minimum distribution. And in this circumstance, the IRS said up to $100,000, you could instead give it to a charity. You're not going to have to report the tax on it. And there was a limit on that of $100,000. So, and I have had people give a qualified charitable distribution of $100,000. So for those people who have really large required minimum distributions and are charitably inclined, this is a great, great way to do your charitable giving because you don't even have to itemize to get the tax benefit. So a qualified charitable distribution is a distribution directly from your IRA. Now, what does not work is you take the distribution out of the IRA and then put it in your bank account and write a check to the charity. That doesn't work. That is not considered a qualified charitable distribution. You actually have to notify your custodian to send it to the charity. And they may send the check to you payable to the charity and you can deliver it. That is typically what I see. And then you get the receipt for it. So still get a receipt for that deduction because at tax time, you're going to get a 1099-R showing the full amount of your required minimum distribution or whatever amount you've taken from the IRA as fully taxable. And then you have to indicate on the tax return QCD for the amount that you've given to charity. So ordinarily, this is a great way to give to charity. And I also want to clarify when I said traditionally the required minimum distribution age is 70 and a half. Under the SECURE Act, they have increased the required minimum distribution age to age 72, but they did not change the age where you can still make a qualified charitable distribution. So someone who is just 70 and a half this year in 2020, your required minimum distribution age is 72. So you don't even have to take an RMD under normal circumstances until 72, but you could still do a distribution out of your IRA to charity and not pay tax on it. It's reported, but then you subtract the amount that's going to charity. Okay. If you're staying with me on this. So what happens with the CARES Act? The CARES Act for 2020 also said, hey, folks, for 2020, you don't have to do a required minimum distribution. So now what has happened? We have people who, if they accidentally took it and they didn't really need to take it, they could put it back if they did it by, I think it was August 31st. they could put it back and it doesn't count. If you accidentally take one now and you want to put it back, you have the 60-day rollover rule that you can put it back and not take your required minimum distribution. You still can do your qualified charitable distribution if you want. You just don't have to do your required minimum distribution. All right? So here's what I'm worrying about for nonprofits. If so many people now are using their IRAs for charitable giving in lieu of taxing your normal distribution, you give it to charity to avoid that taxation, which is a great way to save taxes, you might not have to do it this year. In fact, I myself, as an advisor, are telling our clients, hey, if you don't have to take the money out, you don't have a required minimum distribution this year, you could wait and do 2 years worth of giving in 2021. So if you normally do, let's say, you know, $5,000 out of your required minimum distribution of eight, then don't do it this year because you don't have to take a required minimum distribution. You don't have to report that $8,000 on your tax return because you don't have to take it. Then in 2021, give the nonprofit 2 years worth of charitable giving, your normal, well, let me use $4,000 as an example. So $4,000 for 2020, you normally do out of your IRA, but you don't have to take money out of your IRA, so just wait to do it. And then in 2021, if your normal required minimum distribution is $8,000, now I'm going to say, hey, in January, charity, I'm going to do my half. Hey, I didn't realize I'm at the halfway point. I talked over my break. I'm so sorry, Shandi. We will finish this discussion when we come back from this next break, back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Shawnee Gray. It is 6:31 and 69 with clear skies. Tonight's going to be low 56. Thursday, mostly cloudy with the high 76. Thursday night is going to be a slight chance of showers, low 57. And for your Friday, more showers, high 68. Friday night, low around 47. And for Saturday, it's going to be bright and sunny, high 66. And Saturday night, low 43. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, you can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And Lori's in the studio to take your questions, and she can write it down if you don't want to talk live on air. So let me try to wrap up this qualified charitable distribution concept for 2020. So 2020, RMDs, required minimum distributions, are waived, so you don't have to report them. So there's no real advantage, technically, tax-wise, to make the in the current year to make a qualified charitable distribution from the IRA. You still absolutely can do it. You still do save taxes over time. It's just that you're not required to do it this year. So in my example, if my required minimum distribution is $8,000 and I normally do $4,000 to charity, then I would only pay taxes on $4,000 this year. But instead, if I say, let me hold off on doing my qualified charitable distribution because now in 2021, if my required minimum distribution is $8,000, I can do my 2020 giving of four and my 2021 giving of four, and I don't pay tax on $8,000. So there's a little bit of an advantage there. So that's what I'm talking about. So the concern is some of our nonprofits may not be seeing the normal dollars coming in this year because of the waiver on the required minimum distribution. What I am talking to clients about is if you are going to do this, it is a courtesy to maybe call or contact that nonprofit who may be relying on your dollars. It could be the church, it could be the art center, it could be your alma mater. and let them know, hey, I'm not going to do my normal giving in 2020 because I do it from my IRA. I'm going to do it in my 2020 giving in January. So what I'm talking to people about is do that 2020 giving in January if you're someone who does it from your IRA, and then do the rest at the normal time of year that you do it. Or you could do it both at the same time, whatever it might be. But that's what we might be seeing. So the rest of us have to keep in mind that some of our nonprofits, in a time when they're doing so much in our communities to help, can you imagine all over the country, fires, hurricanes, floods, pandemic. I mean, it's just crazy. And job losses. So we rely on some of our nonprofits in our communities to help, you know, raise up those in need. And if some of those nonprofits aren't going to have the normal donations that they would get for any number of reasons, qualified charitable distributions might be one of them. Will they be able to hang on till January? So that's why you still could do that donation, in 2020 if you are required minimum distribution age or age 70 and a half. I should rephrase that, age 70 and a half. You still could do that out of your IRA. It still would give you some advantages in the future that it's lowering your balance, which would lower your required minimum distribution in the future, and it is still saving taxes. All right. Now, when I say that is a great tax advantage, so we're talking about making the most of your charitable giving. If someone were to and let's say it's a normal year now, if you have a required minimum distribution of $8,000 and you're in a, 12% tax bracket, you're going to pay $960 of income tax on that. Well, what I don't like to see is when someone has an $8,000 required minimum distribution, pays tax on it on their tax return, and then they give me their charitable contributions of $8,000 to their church, and they can't itemize because the standard deduction's higher. Now they've received no tax benefit for that charitable giving. That isn't typically what charitable people are looking for, but if you take advantage of the tax savings that you would get, it means it's more money you could give to charity or, to feed your family, whatever it might be. So in my example, $8,000 required minimum distribution in a 12% tax bracket would cost $960. They get no tax deduction for it. They're out that money. Whereas if instead I used $8,000 of that required minimum distribution to go directly to that nonprofit, I now have just saved $960. But it could even be more than that. And this is making the most of your charitable giving. If I take that $8,000 off the tax return, and maybe I'm someone who is on a limited income, but, I have interest dividends, maybe a pension, and some of my Social Security might be income taxed. The more I reduce my income for money going to charity through a qualified charitable distribution, I could lower the amount of my taxable Social Security. So this could have a compounding effect to it. If you are someone who's in a higher income tax bracket, such that you're subject to net investment income tax or the Medicare surtax, maybe if one spouse or both are still working after age 70 and a half, by lowering the income on the tax return, you could also lower your net investment income tax. You may be able to lower your income for the Medicare premium thresholds if you're someone who's over the Medicare premium thresholds, and this could hit in particular single people. So there are a number of advantages. That's making the most of your charitable giving, being smart about how you're doing it. All right. Let me move on to appreciated long-term held securities. If you have in your portfolio, and we see this, maybe you're someone of some wealth, and you have highly appreciated securities in your portfolio, and you're charitably inclined, and you've always just written the check out of your bank account because you do an envelope in church every week, and you like to put a check in the envelope, but you're sitting on all these appreciated securities because you don't feel like you can sell them because the gain's too big and you don't want to pay income tax. Well, this is a great way to kind of rebalance your portfolio. You can donate to a nonprofit appreciated securities. And if it's long-term, meaning you've held it more than 1 year, that's typically what we're looking at when we're talking about appreciated securities, you can make that contribution of appreciated securities without having to sell it, without having to recognize the gain on it. Therefore, you do not have to report the income tax on that gain that you've given away for federal purposes or state purposes. So you've already saved income tax by making that transfer. It could help you rebalance your portfolio. And, you know, it's great. You save the income tax. If it is sizable enough, along with maybe some other deductions you have, like taxes or mortgage interest, and you itemize, you're going to save again because you get a deduction for the fair market value on that security that you've transferred to the nonprofit. So now I've saved the income tax on the gain, and now I'm getting a deduction against ordinary income if I itemize to the extent that I benefit from that deduction by itemizing. All right. Now, some people will think, well, gosh, what if I do, you know, $24,000 to the charity and I have $10,000 of, you know, taxes that I can deduct? That gives me an itemized deduction of $34,000. I kind of like to point out that if it's $34,000 and your standard deduction is $24,000, you're really only benefiting about $10,000. So let's be really smart about this. Could we amp up that giving with those appreciated securities? Maybe you could do more than 24 if 24,000 is your normal giving and your age, you know, 65, you're several years away from being able to use the qualified charitable distribution method. So maybe you could give away more securities, but maybe you don't want to do it all at once in 1 year and, you know, give the charity, you know, $100,000 today. Maybe you just want to kind of, you know, see how things go. That's when we can use something called a donor advised fund. So the donor advised fund is I like to use when we're bunching our charitable giving and doing a lot of it, you know, at once to actually pass out over several years. Okay, so one, we could do appreciated securities directly to the nonprofit. And if we're not itemizing, we're at least saving income tax for federal and state because we're not having to recognize the gain. That's still a win. You could do the appreciated securities directly to the charity. And if you itemize and your deductions are over the standard deduction, you'll benefit to the extent it's over the standard deduction. And then you're saving ordinary income tax because that lowers your taxable income. So that is a win. And you could still, without using a donor advised fund, you could bunch up your charitable giving and do a big chunk all at once. Nothing's wrong with that. Tell the nonprofit, hey, I'm going to get this done off my plate. I'm going to do it all at once. You're not going to hear from me for another 5 years. That's fine. But another way to do it is using a donor advised fund. Now, remember, I talked earlier about the limitation of the cash gifts. There is a limitation when we're donating appreciated securities. The IRS tells us that it's limited to 30% of our adjusted gross income. So if my adjusted gross income is $100,000 and I donate $100,000 of appreciated securities, that deduction would be limited to $30,000. So you want to think this through. Now, where I have done this with people, where we want to bunch up sizably and their income isn't enough to absorb that full deduction, we might put more income on the return to get the full deduction by maybe doing a conversion to an IRA or, you know, raising some other kind of cash, maybe selling some other securities at a gain to get that income up there to be able to get the full deduction, or doing some kind of combination of appreciated securities and cash to get the full deduction to offset the income and play tax brackets. Okay, it can get quite exciting, your charitable giving. It's just wonderful to be philanthropic and make such a difference in our charitable giving in our communities and helping those nonprofits. You know, we can do it in a very smart way, which in the end gives everybody a little bit more money, either in your pocket or more for you to give to charity. And that's the idea I like. So it saves you some income taxes. It's about being smart about your giving. So cash in kind qualified charitable distributions if you are age 70 and a half or older, and donations of appreciated securities as a way to maybe rebalance your portfolio without a tax hit. And you could do that direct or through a donor advised fund, bunching it up. And I can talk a little bit more about that when we come back from this next break. And then I'll go into just a couple more kind of complicated concepts of charitable giving, including private foundations and conservation easements, and then, of course, time and talent. If you have questions, there's still plenty of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on 88.1 WDIY. And that break just indicated Neil was talking about donating your car. So we've just talked about that tonight, that it's something you can do even here at WDIY. In talking about appreciated securities, I want to go back to, for a moment to the Form 8283. So we talked about using that for the in-kind donations to organizations such as Salvation Army or Goodwill or Purple Heart, that if it's over $500, you have to detail those trips to those organizations and list the name of the organization, their address, what you donated, description, and date and value, okay? The Form 8283 is also used if you're going to donate appreciated securities. So appreciated securities are also shown in that same section. It's part one of 8283, and it's much easier to value those because the value is the fair market value on the date of donation. And the donor advised fund, and I don't think I talked about this, the beauty of the donor advised fund versus giving it directly to the nonprofit, especially if you're bunching them, is when you make the contribution to the donor advised fund, you are still controlling that and you can parse it out in any way you want. You can do, so for example, if let's say I had, you know, a $50,000 security that has a cost basis of $5,000 and it's crazy, I'm never going to sell because I don't want that tax hit, but I'm super charitably inclined and I decide this year I want to do something really special and I want to donate, you know, $50,000. If I didn't want to do it all at once to one charity, it's a little more complicated transferring securities to a bunch of different charities, right? So you could do it, though, to a donor advised fund, which could be set up at any custodian that you might use for your investments. You can also set up a donor advised fund right here in the Lehigh Valley at our very own Lehigh Valley Community Foundation. So you can contact them, go to their website, and set up a donor advised fund even at a local level, and they can help parse that out in particular for local needs that you may be very passionate about helping right here in our own community. If you want to go a little bit more broadly, they too can do that and help you with that. But as well, another option would be go to some of the big names that you're familiar with as far as your own personal investing. So you can set up a donor advised fund. Typically, there might be a minimum. I think it's like $5,000 at, you know, Charles Schwab. And then there's other custodians that might have, you know, similar minimums. But you can transfer these appreciated securities right there into an account. You can name the account. And then you have access to how it gets invested. And then can parse out your donations. And basically what it is you're requesting that custodian to grant from that donor advice fund that you have established, and it might be particular minimums they might have. It might be like, you know, $50 depending on the custodian. And then you can say, hey, send $50 to this organization, $50 to this organization, or it might be $1,000 or $10,000, whatever you want it to be. And it can be in whatever year. So you get the deduction in the year you make the contribution of the appreciated securities. That's when you get the deduction. So let's say I do it in 2020. I get the deduction in 2020 if I'm itemizing. Hopefully I am. Remember, if I do it, I might not, you know, I'm still getting the income tax benefit of not having to report that gain. If it's over my standard deduction, then I, you know, can get a benefit from itemizing, subject to those limitations that we have for highly appreciated, you know, appreciated securities. But I can maybe not grant out of the donor advice fund at all in 2020 if I don't want to. I could grant the whole thing in 2020 if I wanted to, but to any number of organizations. But I might have done so much back to getting it bunched up and taking as much advantage of getting over the standard deduction amount. Remember, we, you know, that standard deduction is so, so high. I wouldn't want someone to, you know, donate $24,000 over each year for 10 years and never benefit from itemizing. Instead, if we have the means and the assets, we could do $240,000 of appreciated securities. My standard deduction's 24. I get a huge deduction this year. And then in the subsequent 9 years, I'll use the standard deduction. See how that works? And then I could grant out of that donor advice fund over, as I said, this year, next year, 5 years, 10 years, however long it takes. And I can also name a successor owner. And I believe you can even name other grantees. So if you want to teach your children how to be charitably inclined, you can add them as people eligible to make grants out of that donor advised fund. All right. So again, it could be with a local, you know, a custodian that you use, or it could be, you know, our local Lehigh Valley Community Foundation, because they have a number of giving options there as well. And you could do cash there and appreciated securities. And appreciated securities can go to the United Way as well. Most nonprofits can take them, but it is a little bit more complicated for the smaller nonprofits. They may not have a brokerage account set up to receive securities. So you're really doing them a favor by setting it up at an organization that's used to managing a donor advised fund, because then you can just grant it right out of there to any number of the nonprofits. And then you don't have to worry about your nonprofit being set up to receive securities. I hope that makes sense. A little bit more complicated might be your own public charity or a private foundation. Yes, an individual can set up a private foundation and their own public charity. There's lots of rules around it. It might not be as complicated as someone might think, but it could be complicated, and it certainly requires a lot of extra work. Tax returns would be required for a private foundation and for a public charity. There's a 990 form and a 990 PF for a private foundation. There are some easy forms that you may be eligible for filing, but there are certain nonprofits that require some Pennsylvania reporting as well. So a little bit more complicated. And when there are so many options available today through either the donor advised funds or our Lehigh Valley Community Foundation, the managing of these can be quite complicated. And if you can kind of put that off to someone and just sit back and enjoy the benefit of your charitable giving, it might make sense to do that. I also wanted to mention something that we hear about from time to time, not that often, but I don't want to not mention it, and that is a conservation easement. Now, a conservation easement, I kind of printed out a description for this, and I think this was from the New York Land Grant website, and I forgot to put the exact reference. But a conservation easement, and these have come up in recent IRS, you know, cases. So I thought I should bring it up in case someone's, you know, asking you about it. Conservation easements allow people to protect the land they love, their most effective tool available for the permanent conservation of private lands. Generally, conservation easements are either sold or donated by a landowner to a qualified conservation organization, land trust, or government agency, and constitute a voluntary legal agreement that limits or conditions certain types of uses of the land in perpetuity in order to fulfill the conservation purposes of the easement. Conservation easements preserve land for future generations by restricting or conditioning certain rights or uses, such as the right to subdivide or develop, to protect conservation values, such as the preservation of agricultural and forestry lands and the protection of water quality. Landowners retain many of their rights, and I think this is the part that most people don't understand, depending on how you do the donation. Landowners retain many of their rights, including the right to own and use the land, sell it, and pass it on to their heirs. A conserved property continues to provide economic benefits to both the landowner and the greater community. The land remains on the tax rolls in private ownership. So there is a deed of conservation, and et cetera, et cetera. Again, it could be sold or donated. Now, you might literally give your land to a conservation organization. So that's one thing. During your lifetime, you may give them an easement. So you still own the land, but you could actually put it in conservation. Or you could sell that conservation. Sometimes these conservation organizations will come to individuals who own private land that may abut, you know, other preserved lands and say, hey, could you consider putting your land in conservation? We'll pay you some money. That's called a bargain sale. So all of these ways to give your land through conservation have tax implications, and there's a tax deduction based on the fair market value of your land without the conservation easement and the fair market value of your land after the conservation easement. That is the element of deduction. Now, if they pay you something for that as well, that's called a bargain element, then that reduces that that calculation for the donation somewhat. All right. But what has happened recently is there are people who maybe couldn't use the full value of that deduction through the conservation easement. And people were getting quite clever saying, hey, I don't need that full deduction. I don't have that much income. Can I sell it to you? Well, there's all kinds of crazy, crazy rules around that type of thing. And it's called the syndication of conservation easements. And you know, some groups were getting quite clever and setting up limited liability companies and forming partnerships to take advantage of people who couldn't use their deduction. And the IRS is really coming down on these. So be careful if someone is trying to sell you something called a syndicated conservation easement. You want to be very, very careful. There are lots of rules around this, but that is what we've been hearing about in some of the IRS news. But that should not preclude someone who is, you know, local here. You really are an advocate for conservation easement. You may have land that you really would like to see preserved in perpetuity, and you could still take care or take advantage of that for yourself. There's lots of organizations like the Poole Wildlife Sanctuary who does conservation, you know, in our local area. So there's always information available there as well. So I hope the show was helpful tonight. I don't want to end without mentioning time and talent. Many nonprofits, if you are not available or have the means to contribute your wealth, your treasure, you certainly can contribute your time. Meals on Wheels, many of the homeless shelters or the food pantries always are looking for volunteers. There are lots of ways to give and donate. You don't always need a tax deduction for it, but for those of us who are CPAs. We do like to take advantage of tax laws when we can, but that's certainly not the point of our charitable giving, and I don't want to discount that or, make people feel like it's all just for tax deductions. It is, you know, philanthropic and helping people in our community and those nonprofits who do so much to support our community. So if you are someone who is coming up on a United Way campaign, please consider your charitable giving and being smart about how you're doing it. And there are many ways to do it. So ask questions if you don't know. You can always ask questions. And emails, you can email me through the website yourfinancialchoices.com as well. So next week, I am going to talk about discuss considerations in retiree cash flow management as well as budget apps for that. So someone, a listener had called in with an idea for retirees, and I thought we'll talk about cash flow management for retirees. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, Lori C. Thank you, listeners. Have a good one.